A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us a prompt that started with a dead drill battery and 20 minutes of kitchen frustration. He'd charged the spare the night before, set it on top of the black drill case, and then his eyes just slid right past it. Black on black. Invisible. And as someone with ADHD, he's been building a whole system of life hacks to fight exactly this kind of thing. Here's what he wrote. Today I was doing DIY, drilling holes in a table for cable management. The battery on my drill died, and I spent 20 minutes searching the kitchen for the spare battery I'd charged last night. I finally spotted it sitting on top of the black drill case, black on black, and my eyes had just glossed over it. As someone with ADHD, I've developed life hacks over the past few months that have genuinely reduced the time I spend looking for misplaced things. Then he asks four things. What neurological mechanism makes our attention gloss over insignificant color differences and ignore geometric clues? Is there a correlation between neurodiversity and susceptibility to camouflage? Military strategists have been studying camouflage forever, and there's the example of Bedouin soldiers in Israel's desert who can detect footprints with almost unearthly ability. Is that due to upbringing, or is there a biological explanation?
So the battery was invisible, not because it wasn't there, but because your brain decided it wasn't worth seeing. And that decision happened before you even consciously looked.
Before I even? What do you mean, before I consciously looked?
Let's dig into exactly that. This episode is about the visual system's blind spots. The hard limits on what your brain will even bother presenting to conscious awareness. And what those limits reveal about attention, neurodiversity, and expertise. We're going from the neural mechanism of search failure to ADHD's effect on that mechanism, to how militaries have exploited the same weaknesses, and finally to whether perception is something you can train or something you're born with.
Which is really Daniel's fourth question, hiding inside the other three. Can he actually get better at this, or is he stuck with the brain he's got?
And the answer turns out to be surprising.
All right. Walking encyclopedia. Where do we start?
Camouflage isn't a property of an object. It's a relationship. It's the failure of your visual system to segment figure from ground, to pull a thing out of its background and tag it as a distinct object worth conscious attention. The battery wasn't black. The case was black. The battery on the case created a scene where the low-level features, color, contrast, edge orientation, were so similar that your brain's salience map assigned equal weight to everything in that region.
Salience map... Define that.
It's computed in the parietal cortex, and it's the first draft of what matters in a scene. Before you even know you're looking at something, your visual system has already built a priority list. Bottom-up features drive it color contrast, luminance differences, motion, orientation edges. Things that pop. A red apple on a white counter pops. A black battery on a black case does not. The salience map assigns them the same priority, which means they're the same thing as far as your pre-attentive processing is concerned.
Pre-attentive processing? That's the before consciousness part you mentioned.
Under 100 milliseconds. Your visual system has already decided what's worth sending up to conscious awareness before you formed anything like a thought about what you're looking for. If the target shares low-level features with everything around it, it never makes the cut. It's not that you saw it and ignored it. It never registered as a separate entity.
So the battery was literally invisible to the part of my brain that decides what I see.
Yes, and this is the thing most people get wrong about camouflage. They think it's about color matching. It's not. It's about disrupting edge detection and gestalt grouping. Your visual cortex is built to find edges boundaries between regions of different brightness or color. That's how it segments the world into objects. Camouflage works by making those boundaries ambiguous. If the edge isn't clear, the object doesn't get segmented, and if it doesn't get segmented, it doesn't exist as a thing you can find.
This explains why Where's Waldo works. He's wearing red and white stripes in a crowd of people wearing other colors. He should pop. But the scene is so dense with edges and patterns that the salience map just shrugs.
Waldo is visually distinct on paper, but the complexity of the scene overwhelms the pre-attentive system. There's an even better demo, though. Search asymmetry. Finding a red circle among green circles is nearly instant. Your salience map screams red, but finding a slightly darker gray circle among slightly lighter gray circles is agonizingly slow. The feature difference is below the salience threshold, so your brain has to switch to serial search, checking each item one by one with conscious attention.
Which is slow and exhausting.
And that's the search Daniel was doing in his kitchen, serial search. Scanning every surface consciously because the pre-attentive system had already failed him.
But he knew what he was looking for. He'd charged a battery last night. He had a mental picture of it. Shouldn't that help?
That's the attentional template. Your working memory holds a model of the target, what it looks like, its approximate size, its color. And when that template is precise, it can bias the salience map. Top-down goals can modulate bottom-up salience. But here's the problem. If the template is vague, the spare battery, not the black Makita battery with the red label on the side, the modulation is weak. And in ADHD,
the template is less stable.
Much less. Research on visual search in ADHD shows altered top-down attention control. The attentional template is more easily disrupted, and the system is more susceptible to capture by distractors. So not only does the black battery fail to pop, but every other thing in the kitchen, the coffee maker, the toaster, the mail on the counter, is competing for attention with a stronger claim than it in a neurotypical brain.
Sir Daniel's ADHD makes him more vulnerable to camouflage, not because he's not paying attention, but because his attention is being pulled in too many directions at once.
That's the reframe. ADHD isn't an attention deficit. It's an attention allocation problem. The brain is hyperattentive to some stimuli and underattentive to others, and the control system that's supposed to bias the salience map toward the target is less effective at holding the line against distractors.
I've heard you say before that the clinical picture of ADHD is more about executive function than attention per se. This fits that.
It does. The executive function system prefrontal cortex is supposed to maintain the goal, hold the attentional template, and suppress irrelevant information. When that system is compromised, search degrades. And here's the thing that makes camouflage particularly cruel for ADHD brains. The search itself becomes a distractor.
Say more.
You're looking for the battery. You don't find it in the first 30 seconds. Frustration builds. The executive function system is now managing not just the search, but the emotional response to failure. Working memory gets loaded with, I just had it, why can't I find anything, I'm wasting time. The attentional template gets even fuzzier, and now you're in a loop where the act of searching makes you worse at searching.
20 minutes in the kitchen. That's exactly what happened.
And it's not a character flaw. It's a predictable failure mode of a visual system with hard limits being asked to do something it wasn't built for, managed by an executive function system that's working with reduced capacity.
All right, so the visual system has these limits. How have humans learned to exploit them? Because you mentioned militaries, and Daniel brought up camouflage strategy.
The history is fascinating. World War I, the British are losing ships to German U-boats at an alarming rate. The problem is that a ship on the open ocean is impossible to hide. It's a giant dark silhouette against a bright horizon. So a naval officer named Norman Wilkinson proposes something counterintuitive. Don't try to hide the ship. Paint it in wild, jarring geometric patterns. Black and white stripes and zigzags that make it more visible, not less.
Dazzle painting.
Dazzle painting. And the goal wasn't concealment. It was to break the U-boat periscope operator's ability to estimate speed and heading. Torpedoes in World War I were aimed manually by calculating where the ship would be when the torpedo arrived. If you couldn't tell which direction the ship was moving or how fast, you couldn't hit it.
So they exploited motion processing, not edge detection.
The visual system has specialized areas for processing motion area. MT in the dorsal stream. Dazzle patterns created conflicting motion signals. The stripes would seem to move in different directions as the ship moved, and the periscope operator couldn't integrate them into a coherent trajectory. It was camouflage aimed at a different part of the visual pipeline entirely.
Did it work?
The evidence is mixed. Ships were still sunk. but the Admiralty believed in it enough to paint thousands of vessels, and the concept evolved. Modern digital camouflage, like the Marine Corps' MAR Petit pattern, works on a different principle. It breaks up contours at multiple spatial scales simultaneously.
Multiple spatial scales? Meaning?
Your visual cortex processes edges at different levels of detail. Some neurons fire for fine detail, others for broader shapes. Marprit uses small pixelated elements that disrupt fine scale edge detection, combined with larger blobs that disrupt coarse scale shape recognition. The result is that at any distance, some part of the pattern is defeating some part of your edge detection machinery. The object's outline never resolves.
So the Gestalt grouping principles, the rules your brain uses to decide which edges belong to the same object, get fed conflicting information and can't settle on a segmentation.
The brain interpolates edges. It fills in gaps. It assumes continuity. Camouflage works by making those assumptions wrong. The pattern suggests edges that don't exist and hides edges that do. And the visual system's built-in shortcut group by proximity, group by similarity, group by good continuation, becomes a liability.
Which brings us to the opposite end of the spectrum. People who don't get fooled. Daniel mentioned Bedouin trackers in the IDF.
This is where the story gets really interesting. Bedouin trackers have been serving in the Israeli military for decades, and their ability to read footprints in the desert is documented at accuracy rates above 90%. They can tell you how many people passed, how recently, whether they were carrying weight, sometimes even their state of mind from the gait pattern.
90%. That's not folklore. That's a measurable skill.
It's a measurable skill. And the question Daniel asked, is it biology or upbringing, has a pretty clear answer from the research. It's training. Deliberate, lifelong, ecologically specific perceptual learning.
Not some genetic gift for seeing footprints.
There may be genetic predispositions for certain visual acuities. Bedouin populations with generations of desert living might have slightly better contrast sensitivity in bright conditions, for instance. But the evidence strongly favors acquired expertise. These are people who grew up in an environment where reading sand was a survival skill. They started learning as children, got constant feedback. No, that track is older, see how the edge has crumbled, and accumulated thousands of hours of deliberate practice.
The 10,000 hours thing, but for visual search.
Perceptual learning research backs this up. The visual cortex remains plastic into adulthood. With training and feedback, you can enhance sensitivity to specific features by up to 200%. Radiologists get better at spotting tumors on scans. Airport screeners get better at finding weapons in luggage. And Bedouin trackers get better at reading disturbances in sand.
What actually changes in the brain?
Early visual cortex, V1 and V2, becomes more finely tuned to the relevant features. Neurons that respond to particular orientations or spatial frequencies sharpen their tuning curves. The salience map gets recalibrated. Features that used to be below threshold become salient because the brain has learned that those tiny edge discontinuities or subtle texture differences are behaviorally relevant.
So the tracker isn't seeing something you can see. Their visual system is just assigning priority to features yours ignores.
And doing it fast, pre-attentively. The same 100 millisecond window that fails you with the black battery is, for them, already flagging the slight asymmetry in a footprint's edge that says this person was limping. It's not magic. It's a retrained salience map.
Which means Daniel's life hacks aren't just coping mechanisms. They're a form of self-directed perceptual learning.
That's the implication, and I think it's the most important thing we can say in this episode. When Daniel puts bright tape on dark objects, or takes a photo of where he left something, or says the location out loud, he's not accommodating a broken brain. He's engineering his environment to work with his visual system's strengths instead of against its weaknesses.
Walk me through that. Bright tape on a dark object. What's that doing neurologically?
It's creating a high contrast feature that pops in the salience map. The black battery on the black case has no edge. Put a strip of neon orange tape on it, and suddenly, there's a color boundary that screams for attention. The pre-attentive system can't miss it. You've turned a serial search problem into a pop-out problem.
And taking a photo of where you put something.
That's strengthening the attentional template. Instead of holding a vague mental model, the battery is somewhere in the kitchen. You've encoded a precise visual spatial memory with rich contextual detail. When you pull up the photo, you're not searching, you're matching. The template is exact, which means the top-down modulation of the salience map is much stronger.
Saying the location out loud?
Dual coding. You're engaging auditory and language systems to reinforce the spatial memory. It's the same reason you remember something better after you've explained it to someone. The act of verbalizing creates an additional retrieval pathway.
So all three of those are legitimate cognitive strategies grounded in the neuroscience we've been talking about.
They are. And for ADHD brains specifically, they're even more valuable because they offload the executive function demands of search. You don't need to hold the template in working memory. You don't need to suppress distractors. You've changed the task from find the thing to look for the bright orange thing, which your visual system can do effortlessly.
There's something almost poetic about that. The solution to a visual system that fails at search is to stop searching and start popping.
And the Bedouin tracker is doing the same thing, just at a much higher level of training. He's not searching the desert for clues. The clues pop. His salience map has been recalibrated by years of feedback so that footprint features are as salient to him as a red circle among green circles is to you.
Which raises the question, can Daniel train himself to that level? Not for footprints in sand, but for finding his keys on a cluttered counter.
The perceptual learning literature says yes, within limits. You can deliberately practice search in cluttered environments. Set up training scenarios, give yourself feedback, time yourself. The key is that the training has to be specific. Practicing finding keys won't transfer to finding batteries unless the visual features overlap. But if you practice the meta skill of building precise attentional templates and maintaining them against distraction, that's more generalizable.
This is where I want to push back a little. You said the visual cortex remains plastic into adulthood, but ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition. The executive function deficits are structural. Can training really overcome that?
I'm not sure overcome is the right word. Compensate, maybe. The plasticity is real, but it's not infinite. What the research suggests is that you can improve specific perceptual skills substantially, but the underlying attention allocation differences don't go away. The ADHD brain will always be more susceptible to distraction. The goal isn't to become neurotypical. Is to build strategies and environments that make the susceptibility irrelevant.
So the life hacks aren't training wheels you eventually take off. They're the solution.
They're the solution. And that's not a concession. It's a design principle. If your visual system has hard limits, and everyone's does, ADHD or not, then the smart move is to engineer around them rather than trying to willpower through them.
I'm thinking about the military applications again. Dazzle ships, digital camouflage, these massive investments in exploiting the visual system's weaknesses. And the countermeasure for the Bedouin trackers wasn't better technology. It was better training.
The parallel is almost too neat. Military spent a century designing patterns to defeat edge detection, and the most effective countermeasure turned out to be human perceptual learning. You can't camouflage footprints from someone whose visual system has been trained to see the one feature you can't hide. The disturbance itself.
The disturbance itself. Not the object, but the evidence that something happened. That's a different kind of search entirely.
And it's what makes the tracker's skills so hard to replicate with machines. Computer vision can find objects. Finding traces, the subtle, distributed evidence of past presence, is a much harder problem. The tracker isn't looking for a footprint. He's looking for the way the sand is different from how it'd be if no one had walked there.
Which is a mental model of the baseline, a template of what undisturbed sand looks like, built over a lifetime.
And that's the same skill, scaled down, that Daniel's building with his life hacks. A mental model of where things should be, a sensitivity to violations of that model, an environment engineered to make violations visible.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the emotional loop, the frustration of not finding something making the search harder. Is there a way to short-circuit that?
The simplest intervention is to stop searching sooner. Set a time limit, say, 2 minutes. If you haven't found it in 2 minutes, step away. Do something else for 60 seconds. Let the frustration dissipate and the attentional template reset. When you come back, you're effectively running a fresh search with a clean salience map.
That sounds like mindfulness with extra steps.
It basically is. And you're the mindfulness expert in this family, so I'll defer to you on whether that works.
It works. The hard part is remembering to do it when you're already frustrated. That's where the life hack needs a life hack.
Which is why environmental engineering beats willpower every time. The bright tape doesn't require you to remember anything in the moment. It's already there, doing the work.
So if someone listening wants to apply this tomorrow, what's the one thing they should do?
Color code with high contrast. Go through your house and identify the things you lose most often. Put something bright on them, tape, a sticker, a sleeve. Make them visually distinct from any surface they're likely to sit on. It's cheap, it's fast, and it directly addresses the salience map failure we've been talking about.
And for the ADHD brain specifically,
reduce the number of surfaces where things can land. The more possible locations, the more serial search you have to do. Designate specific spots. The battery always goes here, the keys always go there, and make those spots visually distinct. You're shrinking the search space and increasing the contrast simultaneously.
This is all making me realize how much of what we call being organized is really just visual system management.
It is. Organization isn't a moral virtue. It's an interface design problem between your brain and your environment. And if the interface is poorly designed for the brain you actually have, no amount of trying harder will fix it.
All right. Let's step back and ask the bigger question. If camouflage exploits the visual system's shortcuts, what else are we missing? What other things are invisible because our brains decided they weren't worth seeing?
That's the unsettling implication. The same mechanism that hides a battery on a black case hides all kinds of things. Gradual changes, slow deteriorations, things that are slightly wrong but not wrong enough to cross the salience threshold. Your brain is constantly filtering the world, and most of what it filters, you never know you missed.
There's a whole philosophical rabbit hole there about the relationship between perception and reality. And I'm going to resist it, because we've got a show to wrap.
Save it for another episode.
But I'll say, one thing that keeps coming up in Daniel's prompts is this tension between the brain he has and the world he has to navigate. And the answer is, almost never, fix the brain. It's understand the brain and redesign the world.
That's been the theme of a lot of our best conversations.
So if I'm understanding this right, camouflage works because my brain decides what I see before I see it, ADHD makes that worse, and the fix is basically putting neon tape on everything I own. Is that really the best we can do?
It's not the best we can do. It's the best first step. The neon tape buys you the time and the reduced frustration to then build the perceptual learning we talked about. You start with the environmental hack, then you train the search skills. But if you skip the hack and go straight to trying harder, you're fighting your own visual systems architecture. That's a losing battle.
I'd add, the tape isn't a concession to weakness. It's the same principle the military uses when they paint rescue equipment bright orange. If the people whose job is to find things in high-stress environments use high-contrast color coding, there's no shame in doing it in your kitchen.
Thanks, Hilbert.
The open question I want to leave with is this. Augmented reality is coming. Smart glasses with heads-up displays. If those devices can overlay salience cues, highlight edges, boost contrast, flag objects that match a search template, do we eliminate camouflage entirely? And if we do, what do we lose? The Bedouin tracker's skill is valuable precisely because it's rare and hard won.
That's the tension. Technology that makes search effortless also makes the skill of searching obsolete. And I don't know which side of that I land on.
Something to keep watching. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumentop for the question. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got your own invisible object story or an ADHD life hack that worked for you, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'd love to hear what's been hiding in plain sight.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head,
send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear hoes. My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.